Save big money on your outdoor project now at Menards. We have everything you need to keep your outdoor power equipment running smooth, so you can keep that lawn in tip-top shape or enjoy some time on your boat. Right now, all FVP, lawn and garden, and marine batteries are on sale through May 5th. Check out our entire selection of FVP batteries today and view our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals. Save big money at Menards.
Welcome to Speaking of Strong Style, where we discuss the news, issues, and events surrounding New Japan Pro Wrestling. I'm Stephen Conway. With me, of course, Jeremy Finestone. We're back on a Sunday. It's an odd day for us, but we have a couple of big events to talk about. The new beginning shows, Night 1 and Night 2, and Sapporo. We both have a lot of thoughts about what we've seen over the last two nights. And there's a very, very mixed bag, Jeremy. There were some things on there I thought were absolutely terrific. There were also some things on these shows that I thought were very poor decisions from New Japan. We're going to go over all of it.
Were you looking at my social media? Because mixed bag was exactly what I used.
Yeah, I might have gotten it from that, to be fair. Yeah, but I mean, but it's the perfect example of a mixed bag of things coming out of two shows. Yeah.
My immediate takeaway is that I felt like I saw the bones of the next 6 months of booking for New Japan, whether good or bad. And I'm not sure I'm on board with every decision that they have in mind, but I think I can rationalize it. So, you know, we're going to figure it out. And you lead the way, buddy.
All right. Well, Colin is here. Colin, I'm glad you're here. Definitely. He says he's convinced some of these booking choices on night one were BR choices. Okay. All right. Well, yeah, we're going to talk about all that stuff. So we will definitely get into it. But let's go ahead and just kick right into this. So sure. We'll have our usual Thursday show where we talk about news, notes, and all that, as well as any new things that pop up. But this is about...
But real quick, let's just do the whole spiel, the click, like, subscribe. We are part of the Fight Game Media Network. We are a special show, and this feed, this episode will be on the audio feed as well. But you can find us every Thursday, 5:30 p.m. Eastern, on this channel, along with Power Bombshells, that airs every Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern. And then we have a number of audio shows featuring AEW, WWE, and Joshi. So that would be the Boom, the Rap, the Dynamite Show, and Five Star Joshi Show. If you are interested in any of that comment, please join the Fight Game Media Network YouTube, the Twitter, social media, email GG at Fight Game Media if you'd like to join the Discord. And Steven, let's take it away.
All right. And also, if you're listening on podcast, please rate us, leave us a 5-star review. All that stuff helps people find the show. And so does word of mouth. So if you have a New Japan curious friend, let them know. We started on the Hokkaido Sports Center Night 1, 3,231 fans in attendance. It began with a Frontier Zone tag match, and we're going to get through these prelims fairly quickly. Yeah. But Tomoya, who's mostly a DDT guy, and Yano defeated Shoma Kato and Tomoaki Honma. Tomoya is involved in the local government there in Noribitsu, I believe is the town. Yano is the sightseeing ambassador. Now, they had a mascot out there at ringside for this. So this is all about boosting the region. And Kato worked hard. Shoma Kato worked hard. And Tomoya got a submission on him with a Tomoya clutch. Sam is here, too, from Power Bombshells. Great. Hey, Sam, glad you're here. So is Dunstan. Good. We got a good crew here. And, basically, Tomoya is almost as tan and as oiled as Honma is in this one. But, this is all about the local guys getting a bit of shine here. So Tomoya and Toru Yano got the victory, and they are ambassadors for the region. So there you go. So these Frontier Zone tag matches in Sapporo were less about getting a look at new talent like some of the others have been, and just more about that, like a little bit of pressing the flesh with some of the local politicians.
Yeah, they had them both here on tonight and then the next night, and they flipped out the Young Lion with it. So they just gave them a little bit of shine. Nothing to write home about, but also, like, it's always nice to see somebody fresh on these shows.
No, and it is. It's also smart just to have that kind of relationship with local city councils and all that stuff. It's good PR. Next up was a singles match with Zack Sabre Jr. and Yuji Nagata. And this is exactly what we thought it was going to be. This is all part of the ongoing rivalry between Zack and Bryan Danielson that we are loving so much. And they are facing a lot of the same opponents whenever they can work things like that out. And of course, Nagata wrestled Danielson. Now he's wrestling Zack. And as we suspected, since the idea of a submission has been such a part of the Danielson and Zack story, it ended with an armbar finish, Zack getting Nagata to tap out.
Yeah. The everything you would expect this match to be, it was that. The other interesting thing is the placement of this match. They got Zack Sabre Jr. in there first thing, kept him protected from everything else that's going on, and he basically disappeared from all the rest of the events. Minus backstage comments. Everything else, just all House of Torture. It was all Nemeth. It was Riddle. They gave him the spotlight, and then they got him out of it. I thought that was really interesting.
The next thing was the beginning of what became the night of the House of Torture here. So we had a six-man tag with Ren Narita, Yoshinobu Kanemaru, Yujiro Takahashi. And they wrestled Bolton Oleg, Ryusuke Taguchi, and Togi Makabe. And this is just standard six-man tag early in the card. We've seen things like this a bunch of times. Oleg looked terrific. He did the gut wrenches. He threw all three guys around quite a bit. Showing the power there. It was mostly the baby faces. It was until Makabe was about to hit the King Kong knee drop off the top rope. But Kanemaru spit whiskey in his face. Makabe ended up getting the push-up bar, knocked about him in the head, and Narita hit the double cross for the finish. We figured this was mm-hmm. going to go here. It was a heel finish for House of Torture, and it set up a theme for the night, as it turned out.
Set up a theme of dominance, you mean? Just, ugh. A lot of people upset about the direction that the company went with the heavy House of Torturist, but I think we're going to have to contend with the fact that we are in pro wrestling and the bad guys have to win in order for the good guys to overcome something.
Yeah, well, I've got a bone to pick with a lot of this.
Absolutely.
So we'll talk about that in a little bit. And then Colin mentions, so Zack faces Akiyama next, right? Because Jun Akiyama, one of the all-time legends of Japanese wrestling, just wrestled Danielson on Collision. So, yeah, I would love that if they got Jun Akiyama in for that one. So I'm in favor of it if they want to do it.
The spiritual successor would be that. Also, Zack ended up in DDT the next night, the night of mm-hmm. the 24th, and he and Chris Brooks have a tag match set up. In addition to that, he is lining up his feud with Riddle backstage, but Zack is going to pick one of his TMDK guys to face Riddle first in order to kind of, you know, make sure Riddle is up to the task of facing Zack Sabre Jr. So Zack is a busy, busy man.
He is, yeah. And I think we know how that is going to go when Riddle faces another member of TMDK. But it probably doesn't bode well for the TMDK member. But there, again, a lot to get into with Riddle, too. So we'll talk about him in a little while. We're not there yet. So let's see. We had the Chaos matches. Okay. Eight-man tag. Now, this was supposed to be 10-man tag, but as we found out, we had the 1 hour after the show curse strike us again. And just as we talked about how Toa Henare was still set to wrestle on this show, about an hour after we went off the air, found out, no, he's not cleared at all. Those stitches have not totally healed. So this was shrunk down a little bit. They took Goto off the Chaos side, and so it was Okada, Ishii, Yo, and Yoshihashi facing the United Empire crew of Callum Newman, Francesco Akira, The Great Okan, and Jeff Cobb. Now, I really did enjoy the actual match here. Goto and Yano came out to ringside, so they were all of Chaos that was in the building were out with Okada. He did the colorization trick with his ring coat again, where they panned up and down his jacket with the black light and got the colors going. It was very cool. Callum Newman really worked hard to get into the ring with Okada early in the match. He really wanted to do some spots with Okada if he could, and he did. It was entertaining enough. The stuff with Ishii and Cobb was the highlight of this one. Those two were fantastic together. But in the end, it was exactly what you would think. they isolated Callum Newman, the new-ish guy there in United Empire. We're getting used to him, though. It's been over half a year, but Newman's still the new guy. And Okada hit the dropkick Rainmaker to win the match, of course. So Chaos ended it all with his hands raised in the ring. And then Great O'Conn held up his King of Pro Wrestling title and glared at him. This was so strange. And Okada got out of the ring and walked past him like he wasn't even there. And I don't know what the point of that was. Jeremy, do you have any thoughts on why they're doing this to poor Okada?
There seemed to be a sentiment among some of the wrestlers that they were either told to or went into business with themselves to set up programs with Okada that aren't going to happen. And it wasn't right. The first, it wasn't the last one to happen. It was the first one. But I was watching them like, no, this is what? And then we got Fightful Report where he did the Tokyo Sports interview. He's like, yeah, I don't plan on coming back. I'm not going to be wrestling in the Tokyo Dome this year. Like, I'm done. So, yeah. Like, what's happening here, guys? Like,
that's fair.
You're not making yourself look good.
And then no one knows exactly what's going to happen with that as far as when Okada comes back, when he doesn't and all that. I would not surprise me if they weren't back at the first Tokyo. You know, it'd be almost like they weren't gone if they came back. It wouldn't be special almost. I mean, it would always be special. This match is always great, right? But, you know, you almost feel like he has to miss a Wrestle Kingdom in order to make the return to Wrestle Kingdom even something important. So I don't see him – anything can change, but I don't see him just jumping back into it next January. Do you?
No, I mean, this has been the whole thing. It's like he can't be on Forbidden Door or like not be against any New Japan talent on Forbidden Door. What's the point? Like Wrestle Kingdom, why would anybody find mystique to that? You got to find a different angle. You know, like a mixed tag with Mercedes versus Britt and Adam Cole or something. I don't know. What are we gonna do what are we gonna do with Okada to make him feel special? Because like everything about what he is right now, like he can't come back to New Japan and feel special in 5 months and in 9 months. And like if you're just throwing him on AEW and then he's just I've got weird thoughts about it, man.
So this whole show had some strange things going on here with it. And then this was one of the strangest. Yeah, I don't know if O'Conn went into business, but O'Conn just trashed Okada in post-match comments both nights. Just, you know, he's putting his selfish desires above the company. He's, you know, the whole thing was just all about everybody else, except for Yoda Sushi and Great O'Conn. We're very deferential to Okada. You're an all-time legend. We love you. We'll miss you. Good luck to you. Spread New Japan to the world. We hope to say. And those two were just like, screw him.
The Naito exit was the night two. We're going to get to it. It was perfect. I was like, great. I love it.
I'm not sure what O'Conn's trying to do with it. I really don't. I'm not sure.
They're trying to get headlines of people have paying attention to New Japan, but man, you're the king of pro wrestling. I don't even know where to go with it from there, you know?
Yeah. It was very strange. It was very strange. So he just stood there with the belt, holding it up above his head like he was the guy at the end to Say Anything with the boombox, playing Peter Gabriel.
He didn't
and
move.
And Okada walked right forward. Past him.
Yeah. And then everybody was just like, whatever, we're all arm in arm. I think he was arm in arm with Yoshihashi and Goto, and they're just walking away and just enjoying it.
Yeah. Walk around him like he was one of the photographers.
You missed your shot when you shot it.
After that came another 10-man tag. This is the
909.
What's that now?
909.
Match 909 between LIJ and Just Five Guys. And what we had here was a preview of each of the singles matches we would see on night two. It was nothing we hadn't seen before. It was fine, though. I mean, you know, they're in front of 3,200 people, so they worked hard. Shingo was in with Taka Michinoku at the end, hit the pumping bomber and got the victory. Again, not a whole lot to this. They understood that this night was going to be about House of Torture. They knew that. They knew that the next night was going to be all about them. They had a perfectly fine 10-minute match and got through it without anybody getting hurt further. Because as we found out, Sonata had a bicep injury that ended up affecting his match with Naito the following night.
Oh, did he? I did not know that part of it.
Oh, yeah. Well, we're going to get to all that.
Yeah. This was the ultimate undercard match. Basically, everything that they have set up for the last... We're not kidding. We've been keeping track of these matches, and at some point, we got to 898, and then we just kept every week going, and this is 909. And it just... It was basically, if you have not watched any match between these two up to this point, this match was basically to tell you, okay, here's what you've missed. So there you go. And then we're going on to tomorrow.
So the title match has started up after this one, and it started off with a bang, and this was fabulous. We had the IWGP Women's title match, Mayu Iwatani, the champion, defending against Mina Shirakawa. So... what we have here are two people that are at or near the top of their factions. Mina Shirakawa currently kind of jostling for position within her new group with Micah, who's got the leg up being the World of Stardom champion. But challenging Mayu Iwatani for the IWGP Women's title, 12 minutes, 28 seconds. And, of course, I know everybody wants them to go longer. I don't disagree. But 12 minutes, 28 seconds made for a very good, fast-paced match here. And New Japan had a lot to do on this night. There was a lot to get through on this one. This was fabulous. It was one of my favorite matches of the weekend. Mina worked the knee a lot, but they still worked a fast pace. Iwatani hit a splash like Tanahashi, which was not an accident. It was a bit of a tribute there. The crowd enjoyed this match. Shirakawa got the figure four with the ropes working on Iwatani's knee. She tried to get the figure four driver, but Mayu turned that into a tombstone. That was about the 10-minute mark. Mayu, again, off the ropes with a double stomp and a moonsault, and then they built to a terrific near fall when Mina got a roll-up on her that was for about 2.9. Iwatani with the dragon suplex for two. They were hitting these moves very crisply, very fast, and the crowd got into it. They were getting crowd, and this was an odd crowd on night one. Some of the things they were silent for kind of surprised me. Some of the things they popped for surprised me. But she ended up hitting a dragon suplex with the bridge, one of her finishers, to win this. It was very good. It was a bright spot on the show. I think the crowd enjoyed it. So this is what we were hoping for, a really good match for the IWGP Women's title. Iwatani, you know, one of the very best wrestlers in the world, regardless of male or female. Shirakawa is excellent. So this was a nice match in the middle of this card. Enjoyed it.
I'm not sure it was a nice match. It might have been the best match on the show. In hindsight, you know, there are people that argue that the main event was maybe better, all that. But from audience reaction to work rate to caliber to story to motivation of the wrestlers, like, I felt like Mayu Iwatani and Mina Shirakawa came out there to like prove a point and just impress people more so than a couple people showing up for, you know, work on a big night. They looked like they deserve to be higher up on the card of this show, and I kind of agree with them. You have been much more familiar with these two wrestlers. I have seen a handful of Mina Shirakawa matches and probably a dozen Mayu Iwatani matches. And I've seen good Mayu Iwatani matches on New Japan and occasional Stardom shows when I pick up on it. This is the match where, like, oh, I get it. You know what I mean? Like, I see what everybody has been, like, saying about Mayu Iwatani all this time and why she, you know what I mean? Like, this was a signature match that if you're like, oh, I should, what's a good Mayu Iwatani match to check out? Like, what is a distillation of what she, this is that match. Like, this was an introduction match to her, for New Japan, for everything, and I would just recommend it to anyone who wants to see more of Stardom.
Yeah, and Iwatani's, again, one of the all-time greats. I have an ongoing friendly discussion with Scott Edwards about if she is the greatest of all time. He thinks she is. I think it's Manami Toyota. But it's a, but you know, there are no losers in that battle. But Shirakawa is excellent as well, and she absolutely did her part in it. And as Venkin mentioned, Sarah, one of the reasons she was working Mayu's knee so much is she does a figure four for her finish as well as a figure four driver, where she, like I mentioned it earlier, she gets you the up in a suplex position, but she has the legs in a figure four position while doing a suplex, and then turns it into a driver. So a lot of that type of work there from Shirakawa. And Venkin wants Mayu versus Kairi. Well, yeah, I mean, those, and then that, so, and that is another, that's another match, by the way, that anytime those two have been in the ring together, that's well worth a watch. So, yeah, good stuff. And again, I'm hoping that this is what the IWGP women's title becomes, is mm-hmm. something that we do see on these big New Japan shows moving forward. And we'll see who the next challenger for Mayu Iwatani is.
So in the backstage comment, they had both of these women back there, and Mina was talking about what a dream it was to wrestle on the Cerulean blue mat. So they were really putting over just the dream come true aspect of having this match. And Mayu actually brought up New Japan Wrestling at Stardom. And we talked about this the other day of whether or not that would actually happen. And she brought it up flat out. So, you know, maybe it's just a tease. Maybe it's just something to appease people to say, yeah, we hear you. But it's more than I expected the conversation to be at this point.
Okay. And Dunstan has a question here. I'll be honest with you, Dunstan. I'm a little puzzled at the question. So if you want to clarify, he says, do you think the card could have been shorter if they cut a match or two? Yeah. But I mean, are you suggesting that they should have done so?
Like the matches would have been longer if they cut a card. Like,
oh, they cut a match.
The matches would have had more time if they'd cut a match in there too. And I'm probably, but they had many mouths to feed over these 2 days. Like they had a lot of matches on these shows.
It's a fair point. Again, you give everybody a few more minutes and then just drop the LIJ, just five guys. And the show has sold itself. The night two sold itself. I'm not sure we really needed that preview on there. Except, you know, maybe the people on Friday wanted to see Naito and Sonata and Tsuji and everybody too. It's a matter of seeing people. And Venkin says, can we just announce Historic Crossover 2 already? Yes, where is that? We heard it was coming. We don't know when. They were very intentionally vague about that. So hopefully coming up sometime soon. So, yeah, and I guess that's what Dunstan was saying. If they cut the LIJ, just five guys match and give it a bit. Yeah, perhaps, yeah, that's way they could have given everybody a few more minutes. But I also wonder if they just thought, well, the crowd would want to see the world champ out there and his friends. So
I am happier with a 10 to 15 minute match that they allowed to breathe and did the amount of stuff that they needed to within that time to not make it feel crowded and rushed and still tell a sufficient story within the match. If you're gonna have a 12 minute match, this is the perfect match to have.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
like
it didn't feel rushed, it was just worked at a high fast pace.
It was high caliber, high work rate, everything about it was right. I hope we get 20 minute matches from them, but you know, Rome wasn't built in a day, and if they're introducing these matches, at first we got 5-8 minute matches, now we're getting 10 to 12 minute matches, 12 to 15 minute matches. They're growing, and I like that, and that's okay with me.
So at this point, Jeremy, everything was all right. Everything was okay.
Sure.
We were doing all right. The Greater Fan thing was weird, you know, but, you know, we're doing okay so far.
You're like, okay, I'm not into everything, but at this point, something has to really go wrong for this show to go down the drain.
And boy, did we find it. Let's talk about it. So the next up is the IWGP Junior Heavyweight title match, Show against El Desperado. Holy Christ. All right. Look, they came out to the ring fighting. So Desperado seems to have attacked Show in the back and gotten his belt back. Remember, Show yes. stole the IWGP Junior Heavyweight belt. So Desperado began fast, but then they started fighting on the outside and under the ring. And of course, Show got the advantage because it gave him a chance to fight dirty. And let's see, Show tried a package pile driver, but it turned into a spine buster. And as the match went on, the story they started to tell, especially on the English commentary, was that Show is tough and his talent is belied by all these shenanigans. You know, like this is right. a tough guy. This is a good wrestler. They kept on fighting and Show would take a big shot, but he would kick out. And then the story would say, oh, he's tough. Numero dos, lights go out. Okay, so he gets the numero dos on and the lights go out. Well, we knew there was going to be some kind of horse crap from these guys. So when the lights come back on, the referee's down. Yoshinobu Kanemaru is in the ring beating on Desperado. Ryusuke Taguchi came down and saved Desperado with hip attacks on everybody. And he grabbed Kanemaru and drug him away. So Desperado starts working his knee more. And they did more things where Show is, oh, he's so tough. He's just staying in there. He's just hanging in as long as he can. Desperado went to attempt a pinche loco. Show gets out of it, shoves Desperado into the referee. So another referee goes down. This is when things went to crap. So the show was on the outside of the ring. Desperado tried a tope suicida. Show hit him in the head with a chair. Okay. So
ref
then
is still down. Ref is still out.
Ref still out. Another very careful chair shot where it was to the head, which I'm not a big fan of, but he did it with the kind of the cushion chair, and he was very careful about how he hit Desperado. So if you're going to do a chair shot to the head, this is the way to do it. Then he faked like he was going to hit him with a chair frame. I think we all knew that wasn't going to happen. Referee kind of grabbed the chair as he recovered. But after that, Desperado put Show in the chair where he's kind of like kneeling on the floor. His head is in a chair that's set up for someone to sit in. And then he smashed the back of the chair with another chair. So it made this big noise and kind of looked like he smacked Show in the head with it. It did make a big racket, and the crowd popped for it. So that was it. Show, stunned, staggered, about ready to be pinned, rolls back into the ring. But just as Desperado is going in the ring to pin him, Ren Narita pops out Tommy Rich style from underneath the ring. God only knows how long he was down there, and choked Desperado out for the count out finish. And Show won the junior heavyweight title
by count out.
By count out.
By count out.
So, you know, it's just
like overthought.
Okay. Let's just put aside that whole count out finish, which I wasn't into. So this goes to my point. In fact, the count out finish even does kind of go to my point that there's a little bit of cowardice in the booking in New Japan right now, that we're just seeing some gutless booking. Here is my point about Desperado and Shota. Three baby faces have left the company. Okay. Tama Tonga, who has been in the never open weight title picture for a year, one of the all-time greats and a constant main eventer for 12 years, Kazuchika Okada, another main eventer and a gaijin legend in Will Ospreay. Three baby faces have left. All of them are in the upper part of the card. The fans are clearly on Desperado's side. They cheer for him. They react to him positively. You need baby faces. And once again, Desperado is cut off at the knees. Why? So that we can get House of Torture back over, so that Show can get Show over? Like, why is that necessary? And to go with Show and Yo, which they ended up doing the next day, where Yo stole Show's belt, we've seen that, and it was fine. Those two are good wrestlers. It's been a while, yes, so you could make it fresh again. But Yo has been basically in his Balloon Okada gimmick for most of the year, just being silly. Remember at Wrestle Kingdom, he just laid on the top rope for about 10 minutes of the Rambo. He hasn't been a serious character all year. He's been playing this little wacky thing. Again, why? What does Desperado do now? You know, and yes, you can have one of these guys who have lost a big match over the course of this weekend get rehabbed by winning the New Japan Cup, but only one of them. They cut three different guys off at the knees in these shows. Sure. The junior heavyweight division could definitely use someone on top. And they could also use Hiromu Takahashi doing something new. The crowd clearly likes Desperado, and they're moving him to the periphery of the picture so they can go with Show and Yo for the junior heavyweight title. What are we doing here? Like, here's the point I'm just trying to make. You can make Desperado a good junior heavyweight champion and get someone new over with the Super Juniors tournament. You can do both of those things. So if we have Hiromu move on to something else, whatever that might be, never open weight titles, the other things, right? We talked about this. Mm-hmm. You can have a champion, El Desperado, that the crowd likes and is into, and get somebody else over in the Super Junior tournament. Now I'm not even sure we're going to see anything different anymore with this. Why cut him off at the knees? And he gets the title win over Hiromu, and then he trips over his shoelaces against Show. Do you want him to be over and the face of the division or not? What do you want? This half-ass stuff kills me with him.
They don't want him to lose, but they have thought about an end goal at Dominion here that I think that they had to figure out how to get a starting point. So last year, Master Wato won the best of the Super Junior tournament, and then went on to lose to Hiromu Takahashi, right? That's how it all played out.
Yep.
I imagine that if I were reading the room right, El Desperado is winning the Best of the Super Junior tournament, and then he is going to face Show after Show has, you know, dispatched Yo, and then he's going to face Doki because Hiromu made it clear that Doki's probably going to get a title shot against him, and then that's going to take us through March and April. Then we're going to get to May and the Best of the Super Junior. This is all just elementary back-to-school basics booking because you're right. They don't. They needed to figure out solid plans for the guys that they wanted to build behind and give journeys for them. It's not like next-level booking, but at the same time, it's just like Show isn't the guy, but you've got the War Dogs completely tied up in other things right now. You don't even know which ones are signed or which one are going to be around. Who's the bad guy junior heavyweight that you go to right now to have El Desperado chase?
Because why does he have to chase anybody? That's the point I'm trying to make. You can establish him as a solid champion and the leader of the division. You don't have to have him chase anybody. Now's not the time to have him chase.
I think
now's
the time to build him. Have a long title reign, but they want to stretch this thing out. They want to give him another run because
they're half-assing.
He never got the chase the first time. Basically, Hiromu just said, hey, your turn. And then they had a match. And so when they decided to do this whole year-long deal with Hiromu, they didn't set up enough meat on the plate for Desperado to have a bunch of contenders coming his way. So they did this so that they give him a chase, and then maybe they'll heat up enough people for him by the time September runs around and the G1's over, and then we're back to where we are now. It's not great, but at least Desperado has a purpose for the next few months. You know, at least he has a purpose.
This is if he wins this match, it establishes him as a stronger junior heavyweight champion. You have a much stronger anniversary show main event. Tetsuya Naito against Desperado was a much better match than Naito versus Show. The other part of that is, that's what I'm saying, is you use the Super Junior tournament, which is a better than a count out finish win. It's even a half-assed way of getting him the belt. And I understand that he's a heel and he's a House of Torture heel, so there's shenanigans. But winning Super Juniors gets a guy over harder than a cheat to win thing. So you could have a stronger junior heavyweight champion facing a guy who actually went through a gauntlet of tough matches to become the Super Junior champion, facing Desperado, who's now somebody that people see as a guy who can defend his belt. It's a much better scenario than this bullshit. Much smarter scenario than this bullshit.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I think they just want to tear him down to build him up again because they need him to be stronger than he is now.
Don't need to be tearing people down. You need to have strong baby faces now. You just lost three of them.
I think they're just trying to make
them
stronger. And I'm with you. I'm with you about the approach, but I think the goal is sound. And so I hope that they know what they're doing.
Make the heel in the Super Junior tournament. He'll be stronger that way.
I can't wait to hear what you have to say about the next match.
Well, so here we go. The next match, after we went through all that, we went through the never open weight title match with Evil and Shota Umino. So Shota already got a haircut, by the way. I guess he was just in the spirit with the match coming
Shota
up the next
Kiyomiya,
night.
Shota Kiyomiya, anybody?
Yeah. And then there were the usual House of Torture shenanigans. We expected that, too. I can't stand this one. He's got Evil in a submission hold. Yujiro comes up and rings the bell. Shota looks up at the referee and then releases the hold like he wants. It makes the babyface look so stupid when they do that. Because why wouldn't he just look at the referee and just like, you know, so it makes him look like a dumbass. Then Yujiro gets involved because the referee gets bumped and all that. Yujiro hit a pimp juice. That led to a two count. Then there was another ref bump. Umino hits a cutter. That one actually looked really good. Blaze Blade. Evil manages to shove him into a turnbuckle. Evil hits Darkness Falls for two. And then they scramble around a little bit more. He hits Everything Is Evil for three and retains the never open weight title against. Now, here's my point again about the half-assed stuff. This is, boy.
Going heavy on the House of Torture in 2024.
So tell me again why you can't put Shota Umino over here as the never open weight champion. What exactly do we need Evil as the never open weight champion for? Do we need to be, oh, by the way, Evil's a bad guy who can win matches by cheating. No shit, he's been doing it for years. What we need is a babyface to win. And again, this is a guy that the crowd is ready to get behind. They cheer for him. They react to him when he does his entrance through the crowd and he's hugging babies and all that. And then every single time they get him there and they have him lose. Again, this isn't the time for some slow build. There's going to be a payoff down the road. Now is the time when you need a goddamn babyface. And every single time they cut this guy off at the knees. And again, the Jack Perry match coming up. Whoop-de-doo. But how could that, how does not making that a never open weight title match, how does keeping the never open weight title match make that any better? This could be a never open weight title match. Why does Evil need it? This is a perfect chance to show the fans that Shota Umino can come through for them. And here's the point I'm trying to make about him. He gets up there and then he loses. He gets up there and then he loses. He gets up there and then he loses. The guys that New Japan have used as crutches for years, Okada, Naito, Hiromu, you know, the ones who are over big time, the ones who these guys who book by spreadsheet go over there and just say, oh, this guy sells five more t-shirts than he does, so he has to win this match because, you know, five more t-shirts is, you know, all that kind of bullshit, right? Those guys didn't get over by losing their first five big matches. They got over. They are stars. They are merchandise sellers. They are big deals because they didn't lose very much. And they sure as shit didn't lose the first five or six major main event matches you gave the guy. So here's the thing. You say, well, Shota's a star. We're putting him in these big matches, but he's going to lose them all. Half-assed. Here's the point I'm trying to make. You have to get these guys over. And right now they are just half-assing it. It's gutless booking. It's booking via spreadsheet or booking scared. They're like, oh, we want them to get over, but oh, we don't want them to put over our big stars over here who sell the, you know. Nut up. Grow a goddamn set of balls and push somebody. The reason those guys are stars is because they were pushed. Okada was pushed. Naito was pushed to the point the crowd didn't want him there anymore. Remember, he didn't lose very much. Hiromu barely lost for the first couple of years he was there. Pick a guy, grow a set, and push him. Don't bring him up there and then just pull him back. Oh, not over the big guys yet. Find a new star for the love of all that's good and holy. This whole half-ass stuff gets nobody over. And that's what we're seeing right now, that the crowd was deflated after this. And it affected the next match, which we're going to get to.
I don't disagree with the word that you said. I do think that there was a conversation that we had on our regular Thursday show that the outcome of this match was going to be a huge definer as to the direction and the pace that we go with some of these guys moving forward. And I definitely feel like they have circled Wrestle Kingdom for next year as the moment that all these guys are going to have their big, you know, denouement and arrival. And there's like, your stars are gone. You know, like Naito can't wrestle all of these guys all year round. And you're rebuilding from the bottom up this entire promotion. And so,
and I'm sure, and I'm sure
all, you just have to go now. Like, yeah, pick all, one of these guys and go now.
And I'm sure, well, and you can say, oh, we're going to do this in a year. It's going to be this big catharsis in a year. Yes, I'm sure all 5,000 people in attendance in next year's Wrestle Kingdom will be thrilled. And I mean, I know that's not literally
what's happening. How many people not watching and following on social media are like, oh yeah, Shota Umino lost again, whatever.
Jeez.
It's just like, you don't hear the matches, but they talk about it. And if you don't talk about these guys as winners when people are trying to pay attention to it, it will have a fallout effect.
Yeah. Sam's mentioning here, weren't they supposed to be putting Shooter over to build up the young guys since Okada and Ospreay are gone? Right. It's time. And we've been saying this. This is not something that you do. This is not the time for the Kobashi build, where Kenta Kobashi lost for years. But when Kobashi was doing all of that, everyone knew he was great. They just weren't getting the results. So he would come within an inch and then lose. And there was a catharsis when he won. I understand all that, except when they did it with Kobashi, Mitsuharu Misawa and Toshiaki Kawada and Steve Williams were all on top, and Stan Hansen. They had major guys who were over and selling out on top so that they had time to do it. There are three major baby faces gone. Who are the top baby faces in this company? Tanahashi, who can barely run the ropes? Huh?
I'll give you Zack Sabre Jr. at the top baby face.
He's getting to be that way. Yeah. Although, yeah. You know, that's one, but you get the point I'm trying to make here. It's just like, you've got to have baby faces that people believe in. Right now, people are going to start believing that Shota is just a guy that just loses the big ones.
If you're relying on the cast off from WWE to get people interested in your promotion because you do not have your homegrown guys ready, you need to get your homegrown guys ready.
Yeah. Or try somebody else. I mean, if you're not going to do it, get them the hell out of these matches or push them. Push somebody. You've got to push somebody. And like I said, all those guys, they say, oh, I don't know. He's not as big. I'm talking about The Office. He's not as big a star. You think Tanahashi got over by losing his first five big matches? Give me a friggin' break. You know. And Venkin thinks that Jack Perry should have at least screwed Shota, because that's the other part. Shota looks so stupid. One of the letting go of the submission hold when he knows the referee didn't call for the bell. He looks stupid there. Then he looks like a putz because he says, "Oh, I'll get my revenge on Evil, but first I got to fight this mid-card guy from AEW." I'm just like, Jesus Christ, really?
I would get a shirt from what he said on the next night, but we'll get there.
Yeah, and then Brad mentioned it. Hi, Brad, by the way. I didn't say hi to Brad earlier. He said, it's like Ghetto is trying to bury talent, so Tony isn't interested in signing anyone away from him. Maybe he's playing the long game on that
line
one.
Line of the night.
Yeah, there you go. Sam's on my side. Gutless Ghetto. There you go. Venkin mentions Naito's not the youngest anymore. No one, his knees are shot.
All those comments, we got them all over the place.
I don't think New Japan really understood their situation. You can't rely on Okada or Naito 24/7. Yeah, and that's why I'm saying some of these decisions look like BR moves and they're dumb. Yeah, it's just and Dustin, now this is I mentioned this earlier. He says, I hate to say this, it feels like a Noah situation. When we watched that Noah show around Wrestle Kingdom time, Jeremy, you remember when I came on here and I just said, you know, I enjoyed that show, but I also feel like I saw this entire cast of guys 10 years ago on a Noah show. Mm-hmm. And they're all 40, you know, they're all between 35 and 50. And I feel like it wasn't the same matches and it was still good. You know, like they were still good wrestlers, but I'm like, it's the same guys. Like 10 years ago.
A little duller.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, it's just like, man, it's just, I it's the half-ass thing. It's booking by fear. They're just dipping their toes in things. And the only way that a guy really gets over is if you just push them. And they just seem gutless when it comes to that. Like they just don't want to, they're just so scared that it's not going to work perfectly or whatever it is. They're just not doing any of it. So who's the baby faces here? Hiroshi Tanahashi?
They just want to go according to plan. And they think that their plan is going to be fine. And I don't know, maybe it will be, but it's hard to watch a car crash knowing that you can do things to stop the car from crashing.
Well, we got to move on here. We're already at 42 minutes and we haven't even gotten through the first night yet, but here we go with the TV title. Matt Riddle, who came out to crickets, by the way. The New Japan fans were not blown away.
They don't chant
bro
like they do in the US, man.
And they didn't chant a damn thing when this guy came out for this match. And, you know, this was something there that I'm not thrilled this guy's even in New Japan. I'm not happy about it. But here we are. But the crowd was quiet. Riddle dominated this one early. Tanahashi got his knees up on a dive by Riddle. He tried aces high, but he took a knee instead. He hit the bro stone for the finish. It was only 8 minutes and 53 seconds. This is quick. Mm-hmm. But crowd wasn't all that into it. Now, to be fair to these two, I do believe that seeing two guys that they have really gotten behind lose in stupid ways, took a lot of the wind out of this crowd's sails. I think they were really annoyed at this point. Here it is, the title change. I mentioned that Riddle's a weird guy to have the TV belt on, but it's also weird to beat him in his first match. He's the TV champion. It looks like there are already some challengers in other companies lined up for him. Okay, but again, I think it's a matter of time before this dingbat does something stupid anyway. I mean, he had a great situation in WWE, and he still managed to screw that up, let alone something that's probably not all that great of a situation for him. I'm not thrilled. He's a good wrestler. He's not a great wrestler, Riddle. He's good. He's not great. But he's fine until he's not. And I still have a feeling that it's the TV title, so if he botches something, screws something up, does something stupid, you're not losing a ton. You know, you could always just kind of bring it back home and say, well, you know, the title's vacated now in case this guy screws up again. But again, it just kind of left an ugly taste in my mouth. This guy's walking around with a belt and beating Tanahashi.
The match wasn't good. It was a total styles clash. Matt Riddle is desperately trying to avoid doing anything that reminds people of WWE, including playing to the crowd. And he just thinks that the work rate is going to get him over, but he still needs a personality. And they don't understand bro, which is what got him, what saved his ass at the Civic from getting loudly booed, was people immediately did the bro chants. So they don't know him. They don't know who he is. I was telling somebody in our Discord, you know, like WWE is like Cirque du Soleil in Japan, right? Like they know of the organization, but they don't know every random rope walker and high jumper that they have on there. And that's what Matt Riddle is to them. Yeah. He's like a rope walker from WWE, essentially. So it's just one of those, he had to go in there and he had to impress, and he didn't do anything other than just be there. And it was especially telling, given with the next match, because there was another guy from the system that understood the assignment and was able to do something different with it. I don't know what the future is with Riddle in New Japan. I know he's going to be there for a while, and they've wanted him for a long time. I assume that his marijuana issue was because he didn't actually get caught with marijuana in Japan, and so it's not. It, everything else is just like, it doesn't matter. We're not
yet. I haven't looked at Twitter yet. Sure. And then in a few minutes, anytime now.
But they got him set up. They're going to have him all over YouTube. They're trying to get him as like the doorbuster. You know, people interested, they can check out New Japan because they're interested in Riddle. I don't know how well it's going to work. They've wanted him for a long time. Now they have him. Let's see what happens.
And he came out to crickets on the second night too. So beating Tanahashi did nothing. Like he got a special entrance. United Empire got their entrance. He got a special entrance and nothing.
He didn't look all that special against Okada. No. He wasn't anything. Whatever.
Okay. So moving on from that one, we had this, which was Nick Nemeth and David Finlay. Now, this is another one where, you know, you can make arguments on either side. Actually, Jeremy, you did a very good job, I think, a few days ago, our last Thursday show, where you made the case that Finlay losing this match could lead to a more dangerous Finlay. I could have gone either way on this one. And if he had kept the belt, like, okay, they're making him a strong heel champion. If they took it away from him, okay, they're unhinging him. The way you made that argument was pretty strong. This ended up being a pretty good match. Finlay attacked out of the crowd instead of making his usual entrance. As the match went on, it was almost all Finlay for the first 20 minutes, of this thing, which told me immediately, like, oh, okay, Nemeth is going to win this thing. So, the fans did get into Nemeth's series of elbow drops. He does that thing where he just drops the elbow over and over and over again until the crowd responds to it. It worked. It was the first thing the crowd really responded to after the heel finishes earlier. Finlay was outside. He threw a super kick at Nemeth. Nemeth ducked. He hit Ghetto. That got no pop whatsoever. Surprised me. Like, that was crickets. But Ghetto, in the midst of all that, they did what was supposed to be a comedy spot of Finlay landing on Ghetto's nuts, and Ghetto slipped him the shillelagh. He hit Nemeth's leg with it and worked the leg hard going forward right there. Nemeth did a good count-out tease, which isn't really a thing in WWE, although they're starting to do some of it. But not a North America thing, really, but he nailed it, did a good job. Got in like 19 and a half, just like you're supposed to. Anyway, once the big move started, they hit a Oblivion. Nemeth blocked another attempt of the Oblivion and hit the Danger Zone, which used to be called the Zigzag, I believe, and won the match. And again, this is okay if the idea is to make Finlay crazier. They might have also put the War Dogs in a bit of a holding pattern, Jeremy, because afterwards Finlay said, he didn't say names, but he said specifically that I found out today that the War Dogs will never be the same, which to me sounds like they got word someone's not coming back. So they might not even be sure who's in the War Dogs right now. So Finlay might be going on a bit of a holding pattern, and he is the guy I said around Wrestle Kingdom time that he should probably be winning the New Japan Cup. So this is a guy, if they're taking the belt away from him, but then having him win the New Japan Cup, we can talk. And again, if the global title really is a world traveling title,
it appears that it is,
then I can see where this could work. So we'll see how it turns out.
So there are a couple of wrenches thrown into the sprockets, I suppose. Afterwards, the match, Finlay went backstage and said, if I win the New Japan Cup, I'm challenging for the global title again. I want my opportunity at that title again instead of the IWGP, which I thought was interesting and maybe a giveaway that he might not be the guy for that match. Right. I definitely see the viciousness going to be up the ante for him. So I feel like we're tracking in the right direction for him. Nemeth was good. I think he understood the assignment and he did well. And I think the crowd liked him.
Yeah.
After Finlay has beaten Ospreay twice and Moxley for that matter, I'm not sure if Nemeth brought the title down by winning it, or if he elevates the title. And I think that's kind of a wait and see kind of thing. We've already got his first match announcement, and that could be March 8th on TNA No Surrender. He'll be facing Steve Maclin for that title. So it looks like Steve Maclin is the first guy that's going to be fed to Nick Nemeth, and then we can assume that he will have a Tanahashi match at some point, either at Sakura Genesis or Windy City, because he made that challenge. Mm-hmm. So we have matches down the line for him. I'm not sure if this is going to be what makes the global title as important as the United States title when Ospreay had it, or even like the luster that it had for the brief time that Finlay had it. So we're in a very curious spot. I don't know. This match reminded me a lot of Dolph Ziggler versus Braun Breaker from NXT a few years back in their WrestleMania, where they went really hard, but you also felt like it wasn't the main title. It was like a mid-card big title.
This is the other point to this, is what we saw on this show was a guy who was essentially a comedy wrestler who annoyed Randy Orton, going over one of the all-time greats and the president of the company for a TV title that Zack Sabre had spent a year establishing, like Sam mentioned.
Yeah.
And, you know, they just said, oh, this guy, hey, Randy, you know, that guy beat him, right, after a year. Then you had... Then you had David Finlay, who laid out Jay White, who's one of the great gaijin leader. Then he stood over the figuratively dead body of Will Ospreay, one of the all-time great gaijins. And then a couple months later, he loses to Dolph Ziggler, who hasn't been relevant in WWE in 6 years.
It's a little bit of like a hard pill to swallow.
I mean, is this a whole thing? Is just what's kind of inferiority complex is New Japan feeling right now about itself? And like, oh my God, we've got a mid-card guy from AEW, so let's have Shota go in with him. A half-assed guy from AEW, Perry. And then we have a guy that has been relevant and a comedy guy. Let's put him over our TV champion and our global champion. Guys, push your own guys.
We really should have seen it coming, because the way he was introduced was shoehorned in at Wrestle Kingdom, wearing a suit, and like all of a sudden he's out of nowhere. Now we're challenging for the global title. Oh, okay. You know, that seems like that one came together pretty quickly, and it seems like it has. And now they're just trying to get that global title. He might end up in MLW wrestling. He may be wrestling that, you know, using the global title in AEW. You never know. I would believe Nemeth showing up in AEW with that title than I ever believe that Matt Riddle will show up in AEW. That's for sure.
Dunstan says Nick in due time could be a great asset in Japan. He's a good wrestler. I mean, he is a good. He's very athletic and all that. But he needs a better.
To be around.
He right. He also just says he needs a better opponent to do that. Yes, he does. And Shingo is our last hope, according to Dunstan. Yeah, I mean, you know, that could be it. So anyway, let's move on to night two. And we're going to get through a lot of night two pretty quickly. But there's the Frontier Zone match again. We already talked about how this one went. And then we had this one. So, yeah, when we go on to that, we have the 10-man tag right here. And this was one that was... depressing again, just because it was the team of Desperado, Bolton Oleg, Shota Umino, Togi Makabe, and Yo. They defeated the House of Torture. Blaze Blade, Death Rider finish. Shota Umino gets the pin like it matters, like it makes up for anything. He's not going to get to be on top, pissing himself in big matches and then winning a 10-man tag on the first match of the show. Yo stole Sho's belt. And, you know, which Desperado just walked away from his team and didn't say very many good things about Yo in the angle afterwards there. He just looked he just seemed pissed about the whole thing. And then after that, we were stuck with the Jack Perry video where he's leaning into the scapegoat thing. Fine. Again, I don't understand why this isn't for the Never Open Way title. Put a little bit of a steam on it there. But there it was. And I guess we're going with Sho and Yo and a Jack Perry match against Shota Umino.
So afterwards, Shota went over to Walker and Chris Charlton and said, Jungle Boy's like, I don't think that's his name anymore. He's like, I don't care what his name is. I'll bitch his ass. Yeah,
Shota and I agree.
On a shirt.
Shota and I agree. Who cares? I don't give a crap what his name is.
There's also a sad note that I have to share with you, Steven, regarding this match in the backstage comments. Speaking of strong style, El Desperado went to the back, and he informed us that his stable with Minoru Suzuki is no more. The strong style stable, and our joke, speaking of strong style, will probably have to be buried until there are pure moments in which strong style is mentioned. Strong style is no more.
Yeah, Suzuki hasn't really worked for New Japan much, you know, in quite a while now.
He's getting paid to work in the States for a lot more money.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, right now he's probably doing better as a freelancer than he is making occasionally. He wasn't under contract with New Japan, really. He was still just making shots. And he's just going to be focusing on other places. Again, the money in New Japan, you know, they don't have the money they used to. So, right now, if he can make good paydays in the United States and in Europe and in other places, that's the way to do it. And then, like I said, convert that money back into yen. It'll do better for you. So
business, man.
Yeah, I know. It's also smart. He also runs his store still in, it's not in Shinjuku. It's Harajuku. He has his little pile driver clothes shop there, the mall, which I'm going to go to next time. Didn't get a chance. Nice. 10-man tag chaos. Here it is. Kazuchika Okada's final New Japan match. It went like we thought it was going to go, Jeremy. It was just a big love fest with chaos. It was against the United Empire, Akira, Okan, Jeff Cobb, Matt Riddle, Newman. Again, Hanari was supposed to be in this match, but couldn't do it. And
no payoff to Okan, you know, going after Okada, nothing.
No, but Ishii and Cobb were great again. It was a fun match. Newman was isolated in there again. This time, Okada hit the landslide. He hit the flying elbow. He did the Rainmaker pose, hit the Rainmaker, and that was that. It was all hugs and hands raised, and Okada leaves triumphant with his stable mates. Very similar, eerily similar, in fact, to what they did with Shinsuke Nakamura a few years ago.
I feel like Okada took a couple extra hard shots from Riddle, and it's like, you know what? I think I'm done for the night. He rolled right out. He's like, I'm good. I don't need to deal with it. Yeah. And then that was it. I did like the handshake and hugs afterwards, especially the Yoshihashi embrace. They were really good friends. I didn't know that.
Yeah. They've been buddies all along. They went through their journey together, really. Yeah. I mean, they were young lions together. One of the prelim on very early Wrestle Kingdom is Yoshihashi and Okada as a team doing job for there. So they've been around for a long time. And Brad mentions it before. Hanari was taken out. He was replaced by Callum Newman, who ended up taking the pin. Who was going to take the pin if Hanari had been in the match? I agree with Venk, and I think it was probably going to be Francesco Akira.
Yeah.
Was going to be doing the honors on that one. It ended up being Callum Newman as the new low man on the United Empire total pool.
Next man down.
Yeah, exactly. So we have the GOD versus GOD here. This was nice. This was nice. This was El Fantasmo and Hikuleo against the Gorillas of Destiny. Tama Tonga and Tonga Loa brought them back and put Jado in as the special guest referee for this. 14 minutes and 4 seconds. Just greatest hits match again. This was seeing Tama Tonga out in a nice way. They even came out with the face paint. They came out with their old music. It was the old Gorillas of Destiny in that sense, although they still worked mostly as baby faces. They weren't really very heelish here. But that was fine. In the end, Hikuleo hit a powerbomb and then the godsend chokeslam on Tama Tonga. Classic, classic way of going out right there. Again, hugs all around. And a babyface leaves New Japan with all of his buddies. So two matches in a row right there that actually left you with a little bit of a warm feeling.
Yeah, it was fun. I wish Tama Tonga well. I don't know where he will go to next, but I have some suspicions, and when it does, I think he'll probably be pretty successful.
Hikuleo and El Fantasmo are still the NJPW Strong Tag Team Champions, so I'm sure we'll be seeing them a little bit more stateside as well.
And I definitely think Windy City might be an opportunity for them to win their titles back.
Oh, you think the IWGP titles there?
Mm-hmm. I think that they lost them so that they could win them back there.
That'd be fine. That'd be fine.
Yeah.
No sign of Chase Owens or Kenta on this show at all, by the way. Not even a mention. Like, they were not. But neither Taiji Ishimori either. Like, last.
He ended up on Collision last night. You on Collision.
I know. Well, I know. I know he wasn't even in there, but like, no mention of him. It's almost like that. If you're not in the War Dogs portion of Bullet Club, it's you're kind of off in space at the moment.
Don't stick around. You're not getting paid for the night if you're not working.
And up next, we had a tag match, Nick Nemeth and Ryusuke Taguchi, because. Okay. David Finlay and Ghetto. And the funny thing is, Jeremy, when we supposed that Finlay might retain his title, we just said, well, this is where Nemeth is going to get his victory, which is exactly what happened. It's just that he was also the champion. Nemeth got an okay reaction here. He got a reaction. This was a better, a larger crowd, for one thing, by a good distance. We'll get to that in a second. But he got the zigzag, which is now, again, the danger zone. But yeah, it was just a basic Nemeth getting the win here and a bit more of a boisterous crowd, and Nemeth got a better reaction than Riddle did.
Yeah,
a decent one night over night. The crowd reacted well to him, which was good to see.
I feel like this was the proof in the pudding of how Riddle got over with the crowd the night before and Nemeth got over with the crowd the night before. And it's not like you could say anything other than their performance, because one of them had an opponent that, you know, theoretically should have gotten them over and wasn't able to. And the other one had an opponent that apparently nobody likes and shouldn't be able to get a guy over. And then one guy got over and the other one didn't. So this, I thought, spoke well to Nemeth's showmanship as a wrestler. He's able to make the crowd care about him. When he was doing the Taguchi funky weapon stuff to Finley, like, the crowd was loving it. And it wasn't high level, like, main event stuff, but Nemeth knows how to play the crowd, and he was playing the crowd the right way. And I feel like he's going to fit in well when he's got an opportunity.
Brad was asking, is Tonga Loa sticking around? I'm not aware of any plans for him on that. I have a feeling when Tonga goes, he mostly goes. Perhaps they could do a trios thing with Hikuleo and El Fantasmo if they wanted to go that direction, but I have a feeling we'll be seeing a lot less of him.
Yeah, he kind of strikes me as a guy that they're going to place as an opponent for them down the line, feeling like left out, whatever kind of thing. He's not a focal point of the promotion, and I don't know what they would do other than make him an element of somebody else's story.
After that, we went into the series of singles matches between LIJ and Just Five Guys. So the first one was very straightforward. Bushi defeated Takamichi Noku 9 minutes, 13 seconds. Fundamentally, well wrestled, but this was pretty much by the books, as you would expect. These are the two least protected guys in each faction. Taka even less protected than Bushi is, and it gets LIJ on the board. Nothing wrong with it, but nothing memorable about it either for me.
Oh, good match. You said everything you need to say. However,
Doki and Hiromu Takahashi was next, and this was a fantastic match. Went 14:45. I'm in the tank for Doki. We all know this, but
we're both in the tank for Doki.
And Hiromu was fantastic. This was great. Doki did a lot of flying early. Hiromu hit a sunset bomb from the ring to the floor. He doesn't always hit that, but he did here. They start hitting big moves late, like the Time Bomb 1.5, Dynamite Plunger, Doki Chokies. And Doki with a Victory Royal type DDT for a close call. The crowd was behind Doki in this one big time. They wanted to see him finally get this win, and he did with the Suplex de la Luna after a struggle. And LIJ in Just Five Guys tied up at 1-1 after this one. Fabulous match, big win for Doki, and gives him a little bit of momentum going into the Cup in Super Juniors.
This is when you play with convention and expectations, and then you get the result that you wanted, but you didn't think you were going to get. Man, I replayed this finish like 3 times. I could feel it for Doki when he won that match. You know, one of those, this guy jobs all the time. This guy's always on the losing end. And on a big show in the middle of Sapporo, he pins Hiromu Takahashi, and it's just like, you know what? You earned that win, buddy. Like, I've seen you grinding all those nights. Undercard, taking pins, doing all that. This is your night. I was happy for you.
And Hiromu's bulletproof. He can lose a match like this. Yeah. He's fine. He's still a big star.
Well, you know what I said. I think he's winning the New Japan Cup, so he could definitely lose to Doki beforehand.
I don't know who's going to win the New Japan Cup, but here we go. Up next, Taichi and Shingo Takagi. These two are fantastic together also. 17 minutes and 28 seconds. Big tough man contest here. A lot of trading, hard strikes, very stiff. But worked mostly safe. There were a couple of shots to the head that were a little rough, but for the most part, they kind of know how to do this stuff. And the clotheslines, forearms, and kicks are usually in the right place. Neither would go down until they both dropped. It was one of those Bushido contests there. Forearms were nasty in this one, too, by the way. But this was exciting. It was a drop kick by Taichi and then a backdrop driver for the pin. An Okada-esque drop kick, by the way, for Taichi in that one. Taichi wins in Hokkaido, and I wanted to mention that, Jeremy. So this show had a much bigger attendance than the first night. This one was 5,355. That's a big crowd in for that building. And the last one this big was in New Beginning 2020. So we're talking 4 years since there was a crowd this big. And it was Okada versus...
Real quick. Can I ask
what's
you a question?
That?
Do you think the change in time of when the show was had anything to do with that?
It could have been. And, you know, the thing is, that's a very snowy area, especially this time of year. And I think the idea of doing it when having the show when it's, you know, light out, heat of the day, and as much as heat as they get, probably was a smart move. But the last time the crowd was this big was 5,690, New Beginning 2020, the main event, Okada, Taichi. There you go. And Zach beat Will by ref stoppage for the Rev Pro title, just to give you an idea of when that was. Hanari Tsuji was the opener. Hanari beat Tsuji in the opener, Young Lions. And Uemura and Kid did jobs as Young Lions. Gabe Kid did jobs as Young Lions in that one. And then before that one, we had one for the 2019 G1, 6,946. Taichi defeated Naito in a G1 match in the main event. So, you know, Taichi and Sapporo, he's usually in a very prominent spot on the card. And a New Beginning in 2019, by the way, he challenged Naito for the Intercontinental title in a show that drew over 6,000. So, again, you know, Taichi is part of the fabric of Sapporo's cards, or New Japan's cards in Sapporo. And here he got a big win over Shingo Takagi.
This was a great match. It also felt like the last match these guys should have for a very, very, very long time. And the backstage comments also seem to confirm that that would be the case there. As you try and take off my headphones there, buddy. I really like this match, although it's going to get lost in the shuffle among these 5 matches. It's definitely worth taking time to watch it, but between the hair match, the title match, the Hiromu Doki match, you had an upper card that's like, you don't get 5 singles matches that feel consequential like this all the time. And you just kind of figure, oh, only 2 or 3 of them are going to matter. But, you know, in some way, shape, form, all 5 had something to it that kind of felt like it made it important. Even Bushi and Taka.
Up next was the hair versus hair match. Yota Tsuji and Yuya Uemura went 28 minutes and 20 seconds. I don't think it should have. It was not bad. This is not me saying this is a bad match. That's not the case. The crowd was a little quiet for it. And here's the thing. These guys, both Tsuji and Uemura, haven't had a lot of long singles matches. They've had some. But their Lion stuff, never long. You know, Young Lions don't go long matches. The excursions, some, yes, they had some. late in their excursions they did. But remember, when they first go on excursion, they're still learning and they're still working their way up cards. And again, not doing long singles matches. Not zero, but TV matches and undercard matches were shorter. So they are both a little inexperienced in having long main event style New Japan matches. I feel like they should probably be in with guys who have a few G1s under their belt and know how to make these matches flow a little bit more. Because Tsuji is very explosive, and what he does looks great. When he dives, it looks good. When he pops into that, the spear looks fantastic. My issue is, like, he doesn't quite have the experience to hook all of those things up and make a match flow for 20 minutes. And when you got two guys that are inexperienced in that, you come up with some dead spots. And this match had some dead spots in it. And the crowd did kind of die off at some point, even though everybody was still very interested in how it turned out. They began hitting big moves around the 25-minute mark right there. Tsuji hit a Spanish fly. There were a series of body slams by Tsuji. He hit a curb stomp. Uemura was fighting back and getting moves in and getting very close, closer and closer. This I did like. He got closer and closer to hitting that deadbolt suplex, but didn't quite get it. Mm-hmm. And eventually, they were in a scramble, getting up. Tsuji explodes again. That explosiveness hit the sudden spear, got the three count, and there it was. Yota Tsuji defeated Yuya Uemura. He then Uemura took it like a man, sat down in the chair, didn't put up a fight as Tsuji hacked off a big chunk of that hair, and then he shaved himself the big stripe down the middle there, gave himself the reverse mohawk, I guess, with the idea that he'll shave the rest later. He had to look
it's
a little
gone, gassy. Man. It's gone.
Yeah. So, again, that was my issue with this match. I mean, what did you think? Again, two very talented guys, but two relatively new to have in for a 30-minute match here.
The match was fine. For the fact that they had the confidence to give those guys almost 30 minutes and say, let's see what you can do. Let's see how you can cook in a New Japan semi-main event. Is a huge vote of confidence for both of those guys. So you gotta take that away. You gotta give that to them first. And there's gonna be a number of singles matches, both of them, in the main event over the next 5 or 10 years in this company. So, you know, for a first time out, I'll give it a B, you know, like doing that main event. They didn't knock it out of the park. They didn't have a match where everyone's like, oh, yep, these are the saviors of New Japan. That didn't happen. But they had a match that said, okay, if they are part of the promotion, we may be in good shape down the line, but we still have some work to do until then.
Yeah, Brad feels like he's been lapped, he said, by his classmates, saying, not saying that TNA ruined him, but TNA didn't set him up for success. He's got some work to do, but so they all do in their own little ways. Mm-hmm. But yeah, Uemura, I still think he's going to be good, but if you're going to do this long of a match, you know, their match at Wrestle Kingdom was better and it was shorter. They just don't have 30 minutes worth of material. It's, you know, it's
they're not there yet, but you know that they can do it.
Yeah. Like, and Dunston said the match lacked the intensity he hoped for. And he said there was no sense of urgency in a hair versus hair match. Like I said, there's work to be done with these guys as far as figuring out how to do these types of main event type of matches. So, up next, we had guys that do know how to work a main event style match. The issue is one of them was a little bit hurt. So we had world heavyweight title, Tetsuya Naito and Sonata. And by the way, with Uemura, you know, his post-match comments were, I'm going to rebuild myself. So that's the story. And again, the idea was the person that got their head shaved was busted back essentially to Young Lion status, which isn't literally true, but like, all right, well, now I got to pick myself back up. And that was really about it. He didn't declare anything else there. Tetsuya Naito and Sonata, 24 minutes and 5 seconds. Sonata had a bicep injury, and that became a factor as the match went on. Naito worked, I believe it was either a bicep or an elbow. I had heard bicep. Naito worked his neck early, of course, because of the Destino, draping DDT on the floor, lots of neck work. A lot of things with a hip toss where he brings the guy down on his knee instead of just flat back landing. Sonata, of course, went for the knees with basement drop kicks. And so 10 minutes in, we had our story, knees versus neck. And Sonata got a skull end at 13 minutes. They began fighting for big moves. Sonata hit a TKO at about the 20-minute mark, moonsault for two. Naito countered a deadfall into a Destino. That looked pretty cool. Even got a second Destino, but it felt like he wasn't supposed to. It looked like that was supposed to be blocked, but Sonata couldn't quite block it. A tornado DDT was botched because Sonata couldn't really hold him up. So the match toward the end, as his arm began to fail him, fell apart a little bit the last few minutes. And by that, you know, that matters on Destino attempts too, because the guy taking the Destino has to kind of help him over. And but in the end, the deadfall was countered into a tornado DDT cradle for three. So he set up the tornado DDT instead of doing the DDT part, turns it into that inside cradle, small package, as we used to call it when I was a kid, and did got the three count there.
Did you feel like they gave up on the Destino and just went with that instead?
Yeah, I wonder. I do wonder if, like, okay, he can't do this. You know, he can't get me.
There was a lot of Destino attempts that just looked bad. Mm-hmm. And then they tried a couple of those tornado DDT off the ropes, and then they finally hit it. Like, all right, we're just doing it now. And like, mm-hmm. we can't keep doing this. So I think that's why it went a little shorter. They probably had a little bit more in there. Like, no, we need to take this home. I can't go.
Yeah. Dunston said, unless they're in there with a vet like Okada or Ospreay, they don't have a second or third gear. I believe he's talking about Tsuji and Uemura. But again, that stuff will come. I just thought that was a little ambitious. But Brad said, if Sonata misses a large amount of time due to injury, that's another big person. That's another big face.
He was heading down to the mid card.
Well, we'll see how that turns out.
I don't know what the plans are for Sonata, but it felt like when he was looking at Naito on his way out of the ring, he was saying goodbye to the main event for a while.
Yeah, I think that's probably true. But this was all about getting us to Moxley versus Naito, which is what we really want to see anyway. So this is what it should have been.
Do you remember when we watched the road to Naito at Wrestle Kingdom and we watched the Muto versus Naito match from Wrestle Kingdom 6 in December?
Sure.
Mm-hmm. This was that match. Like, it was just knees, like taking night, like shining wizards and knees, and it was, I was watching it like, man, this is that match that we watched with Stardust, Naito, and Muto, mm-hmm. but this time it's a more experienced Naito, and it's a guy who's not as good as Muto, and the mm-hmm. results were different, but it was the same match, and it was shocking to me when I was like, oh my, like the light bulb went off halfway through the match. I'm like, this is the same damn match.
Well, there you have it. So we're on to the anniversary show now, which is Naito versus Show. And then we're on to the Windy City Riot, which will be Naito and Moxley, which we are very much looking forward to. And so far, that's the only thing we know about for the anniversary show is Naito versus Show. So again,
did you catch the backstage dialogue between those two?
Yeah, a little bit of it. Yeah.
They have really good chemistry. Like, I don't know how the match is going to be, but their interactions, I was just like, holy shit, this is actually really entertaining.
It might be, but man, if they bog it down with a bunch of House of Torture stuff, it could end up being pretty rough. But
do they have any preliminary matches for there, or are they just like, we're hitting the ground running on March 6th and we got a match?
Well, they have until March 6th to announce it, though, don't they? So we expect that we'll hear who's going to be in the New Japan Cup this coming week. We'll probably find out more about that. We've got a couple of weeks.
Probably in like an hour from now, we're going to get the news drop on the New Japan Cup.
those guys. But Dunston says, we are now in the official rebuild phase of New Japan. We're screwed. And I worry that he's right, because, like I said, stop half-assing this stuff. Pick a guy and go with it. Maybe it's Tsuji. He's the one that actually came out of this looking better than anybody else, truly. I mean, you know, Desperado, Shota, all these guys, you can only rehab one guy by putting him over in the New Japan Cup. You've got to get behind somebody. You've got to let the fans believe in something. One of the most important things for a babyface is that the fans believe he will come through for them. Now, that doesn't mean that they have to all the time. It doesn't mean that the heels can never win. But for the love of God, you cannot send the message that your hero will always come up short. That will not make him a hero. That'll just make him a schmuck. They have to pick one of these guys, decide, and go with it, and just go back through their own archives. Tanahashi, you were there. Ghetto, you were there. Did Okada? Did Naito? Did Hiromu lose as they were coming up? The answer is no. You guys know it. Grow a set, pick a guy, and go with him. Stop this half-ass stuff. Go with somebody. They need it. You need new people on top, because the top people have left, several of them. It's time for new baby faces, and the only way to make new baby faces for them to get over and convince the crowd that they will come through for them. Yep. And then when they, in the rare instances when they don't, it means something. But right now, a Shota Umino loss doesn't mean a whole lot. And if he goes into the New Japan Cup and loses in the semifinals or even loses in the finals, not good enough. Another big match that he lost. Think about that. Do better. Do better. You have to. You got a good crowd here. This was a good crowd. The cupboard's not bare. But for the love of God, you can't keep going like this and tell people that, oh, yeah, get behind this guy. But no, we're going to take it away. It's not healthy. Not healthy.
Real quick before we go, I just want to shout out Mike Gilbert and JD Oliva from the Mike and JD Show. I workshopped with them what possibility Nick Nemeth would have about facing Macklin at No Surrender as the first thing before the PW Insider news came out and pretty much confirmed it. They were very helpful with their information about TNA. If you ever need that kind of information, go find Mike Gilbert. He's the guy.
There you go. All right. So with that in mind, we're going to have to wrap this one up, and we will be back next week to talk more about the announcements to come this week. Again, we should have a lot more information on the New Japan Cup field. Don't forget, if you didn't watch Power Bombshells live today, I did. It was terrific. Go back. Some very important discussions on that show that are always worth picking up with Sam and Mel. That comes out 1 p.m. every Sunday. Dynamite show after Dynamite, go figure. And the rest of the stuff on Fight Game Media. A lot of good stuff coming up. WrestleMania season, a lot going on.
Don't forget to subscribe to our own audio feed that you can find in the links on every episode on the YouTube. And this will be a bonus show on the Fight Game Media Network audio as well. So keep an eye out for that and subscribe to that feed if you want more great shows. Steven, I'll see you Thursday.
We'll be back Thursday at our regular time and our regular show to talk New Japan Pro Wrestling. Thank you once again, everyone, for tuning in and listening. Speaking of strong style, we'll talk to you again very soon.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.